colours tonight.
Yeah.
Now that you saved me out of the championship. So I'm just going to start with a couple of nostalgia homes. So fairly tough astrology from my college days. I'm not going to tell you which decade. Actually, I am from the home side. So, class of 84. We learned of Lennon's death along the Orange Sea. A real star had gone out, not some celebrity. We missed some lectures there on the cafe's Orange Sea. Desire was in the air, and we knew just where to meet. The must-read books were swapped on those sponge-filled Orange seats. No text, no mail, no web, but connection complete. We faced recession there on the cafe's Orange seats. Some emigrated far after hammering the streets. The coffee tasted grim down on the Orange seats, but describing it right now, I'd call it bittersweet. Like Jerry Murphy now, throw my favourite on the next one's kind of just to let you know, I'm going to kind of mix up poems and haikus, so I thought I couldn't inflict like 20 minutes or 25 minutes of haiku only, it would be a bit hard to take, so I'm just mixing up the poems and that. Okay, so this one's called From Shambo Man. It's also from my college day. He is from County Leitrim and proud of it. Lowest birth rate in the country, he says, but I'm going to change all that. This man eats his sandwich in a particular way, holding it at the corner crust, not touching any other part. He eats from the outside edges in. Although he is not handsome, the women like him. He makes them laugh, puts them at ease. He gets away with murder. School summers spent working in the Rigna mines, lunchtime underground, hands black with coal dust, the men eat their sandwiches and discard the crust. This next one is, I'm sure we've all done workshops and courses and you get an exercise to do, and a very popular exercise is to take a poem or a painting and take a painting or a photograph and write a poem about it. I'm sure plenty of you in the room have done that. So this is my effort at this, and it's called Sunday, Women Drying Their Hair, which is the same as the name of the painting. Bare-legged in light pale clothing, three young women stand on an urban rooftop. New York, probably, or some other big city. They're letting the wind dry their hair while white garments sway on a line behind them and the chimney beside them casts a long shadow. It is 1912, and Sloane subjects could be sisters. One redhead in a green skirt, one brunette, one blonde. The brunette looks approvingly at the redhead, while the blonde brushes her hair hanging like a curtain, her head tilted to the right, the left hand on her hip for balance. I imagine they're chatting about the night before, what they did, who they saw dancing. Girl talk. One of them could be softly humming After the Ball or something jazzy. No world war to bother them yet, and no depression. This year forever marked by a ship called the Titanic. This is how I would like my three sisters to be. Close, relaxed, hanging out happily. The brunette smiling at the redhead. The blonde still long-haired and carefree. And me with the youngest girl looking on from the gallery. Taking it all in. I'm just going to read a few haiku now. I think since we're more or less still in summertime, I thought I'd read a few haiku from beaches around the country, a few in Kerry and upstate. So it's called On Beach. Barbie at the beach. Miniature ghetto blaster silent beside her. A handsome couple jumping over the waves, their naked daughter. A rescue helicopter whirring overhead, jellyfish on the sand. Three horses sea swimming, spotted just as film runs out. Ballyhay Beach, a small group circles the dead dolphin. sinking all the sun on each strand, last ice cream. And I'm going to stay with a kind of watery theme for the moment, or a few kind of watery poems. First one is from Tipperary, actually. Even though the title is misleading, the title makes it sound like it's in New England, but don't let that fool you. Breakfast on the Cape. You fetch him from another room, this grumpy faced Buddha from God knows where, with his blood red cloak, elongated ears. We face each other across your kitchen table, my sleep-filled eyes level with his curled eyebrows. What has turned his mouth down so? Was it all those years languishing in lotus pose in your mother-in-law's loft? The lack of good company, or an excess of speech-free exhalations? Or was it simply too many lifetimes of bodhisattva ennui? I chew over these questions as we boat across the lake, pass over mountaineer rock, and turn the wind at our back. The next one is we're back in Dublin. It's called The Swimming Women. The swimming women delight in learning new strokes, say please God and God bless a lot. Leave piles of worries in the changing room and find them gone after a good dip. The swimming women soak pendulous breasts and sagging bellies, push big buns into bigger knickers. Talk easily of hysterectomies and nervous breakdowns. See you next Tuesday, please God. That one actually was a runner-up poem in Brendan Kennelly Festival a few years back, but they loved it in Kerry. They're everywhere, they're good women. This is one, a little bit more recent one from spring. And it's called Objet d'Art, and there's an epigram. Okay. The epigram is, have nothing in your house that you do not know to be useful or believe to be beautiful, by William Morris. It's kind of a feng shui oracle. If you're clearing out your clutter, you know, is it useful? Yes, no. Is it beautiful? Yes, no. And if it's neither, you throw it in the bin. It sits on my desk, this translucent object of plum and yellow, forged on Murano Island with a boiled sweet, its wrapping destined never to be twisted off. I tried to gift it to a sculptor cousin who protested, too many objets d'art and too few spaces for them. And so it seems we're stuck with each other, I and this quaint Venetian pretty 70s sweater diamond pattern. It catches spring light as only glass can, stretching the length of my hand, just one swift move away from this sweet tooth. And since we're in Murano in Italy, I thought I'd read a few haiku from Italy. The kind of earlier ones. This is arranged alphabetically, so it's actually quite easy to read. So I'll just read a few kind of older ones, and then just a few newer ones, because I was in Italy on holidays this summer, so if you indulge me, I'll read a few newer ones as well. So these are from different parts of Italy. I tell him I'm alone, the look of horror on the gondolier's face. Tall sea pine, please don't drop your cones on me. Summer afternoon, sun on the Adriatic, this wartime bunker. Piazza hopping, church crawling, I stumble into a mass. A bin truck blocking my view of St. Peter's, rosary beads up front. This morning's rain drained off inside the pantheon. Through newly dusk, an old woman in green closing her shutters. Murano Island, an exchange of glances reveals a glass eye. Its heart shape taking some of the sting out, mosquito bite. Such stillness, this clifftop castle, its stringed instruments. I'm going to do a few kind of poems about the foul rag and bone shop. These ones are always tricky. I suppose love poems in a general term, but there's actually only one really good love poem. The others are either getting into it or getting out of it, or trying to get into it and not getting into it. Anyway, the first one is called Audition. She learns and stages that she is his type, cast as lover, partner maybe. He woos her with square meals, little songs, and a hint of deft effarage. Her voice is just right, good tone quality, dark and low like the hair. Features fine and strong, eyes bright, soul old, hands long and elegant, fingers busy, writing their own script. And this is Sonnet, typically in Sonnet, I'm reading. Sonnet, which probably is, yes, this is more romantic. It's called Fathomless. Before I drift into a deeper sleep, a jaded mind succumbs to drowsy mist. There is one matter I would like to keep, twist of your hair in my knuckled fist. I would be married by your boyish laugh, its coy contagion travelling throat, a chocolate kiss upon a double raft, spontaneously overboard, afloat. The tempests tend to take us unawares, and lightning strikes us when we least expect it, but still in all we're not too easily scared in this dream of blue waves weathering true grit. Awake to find your tresses in my hand, the promise of a passage to dry land. Thank you. For some reason, I always seem to find breakups more inspirational, or relatively more inspirational. A number of breakup poems. This is probably the most recent one, actually. It's not that obvious from the poem, but it's a breakup poem. But now you all know it is. So, anyway, it's called Trench Map, and it was inspired by looking at a map of World War I trenches. I don't know if anyone's ever seen one, but it's quite an extraordinary thing to look at. So this is a trench map. Red is stubborn, red is stuck, red is a hothead. Blue is busy, blue is sharp, blue is untrue. Red line skirts the asylum, blue borders the nail factory. They meander across the page, dug in, dug out, not joining. A cruel cartograph. In this savage landscape where terrestrial loss or gain is measured in inches, landmarks do not translate well from occupied into allied. Red is a hothead, blue is untrue. That's the first time I've read that poem. And just since we're on World War I vibe, last summer I had a holiday in France, and I visited the grave of a great uncle of mine and my cousin. I was here tonight. His name was Donald O'Sullivan, and he was a priest and a chaplain for forces. And unfortunately, he just died a few months after going over to the war, World War I, in France. And what else do you need to know? So he's buried over there, and I decided I wanted to go and visit his grave. So I went up and visited his grave, and quite a moving experience. He was a young man, he's in his 20s, and he died giving last rites to another soldier. And what happened was, he was hit by a shell, and the soldier that he gave the last rites to survived. And our great uncle was from Killarney, so the soldier who survived went to travel to Killarney to visit our great uncle's mother. And apparently spent a week or two there, and you know, was about with family, and was able to tell them how Donald died. So that's the story. And I just caused a wonder why in the book, the yew tree in Boulancourt. Under the yew tree, by the large crucifix, my great uncle. On his grave, roses in bloom, like in the old war song. Just 5 days after his anniversary, soft rain falling. Over the wall, a dozen rows of soldiers' graves. A white butterfly flits from stone to stone. Birdsong. On the way home, we cross the wide Somme, slowly moving. So, I'm going to stick with the sort of love theme. This time it's kind of about rejection. Romantic rejection. Which I've discovered is can be also inspirational. So the first poem is called The Exact Nature of Eden. Eden, you know, paradise, nirvana, heaven even. By now she has offered you the apple. By now you have accepted it. You search for the fig tree. Eden, placed before the fall, a garden to which you can never return, naked or clothed. This fruit was within reach, now ripe on the bough, no bite marks on its shiny skin. Eden and that moment of choice, the descent into the everyday negotiation togetherness. There are only assume one time or another, and the next one is called Soup Season. A time for chopping, boiling, blending, salting into nourishment. Curry is not to everyone's taste, but he uses it well. Better to keep them guessing, always. The recipe itself won't reveal all his secrets. He feeds her ladle by ladle until she is hooked. Spring approaches, and it's time to wean her off this tureen. Time to think about returning to salad days with another. Since we're kind of in autumn, I just want to get time in.
Sure.
Yeah. Just an autumn poem and some autumn haiku, and then maybe just a few beautiful poems. So this is called Autumn Day, and it's my version of a Rilke poem. In Herbert, but it's quite a famous. Apparently, my brother-in-law is German, and he was telling me that Autumn Day is one of those poems, it's like Lake Island, their Lake Island Innisfree that everybody knows and learns in school. So, Rilke would be like the national poet. So, Autumn Day. Lord, it is time. The summer was mighty. Leave your shadow on the sundial and let the wind loose in the pastures. Direct the last of the fruits to ripen. Give them two more balmy days to bring them to fullness and hound the last sweetness into the cider. Whoever has no cottage will not build one now. Whoever is alone will stay on the shelf and wake, read, write long letters and wander restlessly up and down boring, kicking leaves along the way. Supposed to be wine, actually. I changed the cider. Okay, so just a few autumn haiku under A for autumn, which is quite apt, actually, because as some of you might know, autumn is considered to be kind of the season for haiku poets. It's just supposed to be the best season. Maybe it's the melancholy or the darkening evenings, or you can see the moon more clearly, but anyway, with regard to this kind of September sunrise, seagulls strolling across the empty pitch. By the stone crucifix, bursting with red berries, Cotoni Aster. Nothing left of yesterday's blackberries, this invisible pond. Riverside woodland, autumn leaves resting on a dry waterfall. Childhood swing long gone from here, wild mushrooms. Leaving Bull Island, the plaintive cry of unseen sandpipers. I love sandpipers, that's my favourite bird. Do you get them here? Yeah, I love the anthem. Okay, just finished with two musical poems and musical haikus. Just a few more.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So this one was inspired by a documentary about Maria Callas that I saw a few years ago, and she had a very tragic life, as we know. But one thing I didn't know before I seen the documentary was that she actually had birds in a cage as a child, and they were her companions, and she didn't really have a lot of friends, and her mother was very dumb here. You're familiar with the story?
Thank you. I'm a fan.
You're a fan as well, yeah. You got Maria Callas phone?
No.
You like to go right, one of them? Okay, so it's called Bel Canto Repertoire. Bel Canto is just a style of singing, as you probably know, that's sort of a natural way of using your voice. And she was supposed to be one of the classic Bel Canto singers. The villanelle. She memorizes notes upon a page, and dreaming of adoring crowds, she spies her only friend, three songbirds in a cage. Hard work and talent earn her a good wage. To win her mother's love, she tries and tries. She memorizes notes upon a page. A famous diva flies into a rage, as tragic as Madame a butterfly. Her only friend, three songbirds in a cage. Her lover's mood's more difficult to gauge. He courts another beauty, Callas cries. She memorizes notes upon a page. Though adulated more while on the stage, some years on Onassis as the vibe, her only friend, two songbirds in a cage. Her voice is weaker now at middle age. In Paris, all alone, her sad heart dies. She memorizes the notes upon a page, her only friend, two songbirds in a cage. Okay. No hair. I don't know your name. This one is a poem I wrote after visiting the English Academy.
Roller.
Great. Did you know the Joe Mooney Summer School is from Shambo and Leitrim, no? Too far up the country, this? It's a good bit up right. So I wrote this anyway after. I was there about 10 years ago. I did a singing workshop. So it's about workshop really in the week. Both of course, of course. The Sligo train takes me to the singing place, the place where mines and quarries can be treacherous and the undertaker buys more than his fair share of drink, where the famine graveyard is a single field, the sun shining on its silent slope this afternoon as my friend refuses to play a flute lament. I'm here to sing, and sing I do in a classroom of women who've journeyed to this town to do the same. We learn 20 songs together from Belique Rosie with the red jacket and the red glass. We sing about the good ship kangaroo, the bonny bunch of roses, and the verdant grave of screams. We sing next door to the harpers and fiddlers. We drink tea with the box players and the set dancers. We nod to the baron and pistol players. We sing. Our instruments are invisible. We carry them everywhere. They are our own, and only they can marry the words to the tune. In Monica's bar, we swap songs like these, applause stringing this one to the next. We sing of emigration, of love charmed or doomed, of death and rebellion. We can't stop singing except to listen to another song. We don't want the singing to stop, but voices will not hold out forever without a break. The train home is silent. That's the longest poem I've ever and I just finished with the poem and then used the haiku. This is called Ear to the Sound, and it's set in the Stowe in County Kerry, where I've been very fortunate to spend some time over the last number of years, and about a session here. It's very self-explanatory. You all know what a kigger is, you all know what a baron is, yeah, so I'm just explaining those. Okay. Ear to the Sound. The regulars are in, the instruments unpacked. The TV is turned off and the first tune is struck. It's Saturday night in Tanker's Bar. The old man we call the Kigara begins his rounds, hovering over us, an angel in corduroy. Sometimes he takes a break and dances solo, his hands reaching out for his phantom partner's waist. It's Saturday night in Tanker's Bar. Polkas and waltzes are the most popular, with jigs and reeds get toes tapping. The key change will always get a hoop, and singers are welcome here. It's Saturday night in Tanker's Bar. percussion departments of Present and Correct, Tubaron and Curly on the Wooden Spoon. Or Pekira prefers to float over the real musicians, savouring each breath and bow, each button as a strum. Solo banjo, silencing the session with a new tune. Midway through the lament, opening my eyes to see hers closed. Temporarily off duty, the conductor swaying to a jig. Youth orchestra, ringless fingers rendering Rossini. Around the corner from the Dvorak Museum, a drummer practicing. Flute notes evoking, I am sleeping, do not awake me. Thank you very much.
May the seven. Thank you very much.